WMFO, Medford. Like milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books. There is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning, it's the 7th of November. I'm gonna do a double billing, sustained show, double feature. After the War of the Worlds build-up, all the Orson Welles interviews and such, I'm going to go back to the double radio format with two westerns. This first one's The Trial. It was episode number 11. With an original air date of the 13th of April, 1958. Written and directed by Anthony Ellis. This is J.P. Kendall and the Frontier Gentlemen.
I attended a murder trial in Fort Benton, Montana Territory. To say that it was unusual is putting it mildly.
Dear gentlemen, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. What is a man with a gun? He lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territory. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
Since I've left it 5 weeks earlier, except perhaps for one thing. It was spring now. You could feel it in the streets, smell it in the sun-warm air. I walked up to the little building and housed the Fort Benton Dispatch, a newspaper run by John Warren, whom I had met during my last visit. Outside, a group of men were standing about, peering through the windows. I thought that they looked at me rather strangely when I went inside, and it only took a moment to see why. The newspaper editor, Mr. Warren, sat pale-faced, looking at a rather fierce individual who stood a few feet away from him, wearing two pistols and cradling a shotgun in his arms.
Mr. Kendall.
Well, how are you, Mr. Warren? Am I interrupting?
No. Sit down. This is George McCune, J.B. Kendall.
Howdy.
Mr. McCune?
That's right. What are you, a deputy or something?
No.
Mr. Kendall's a newspaper man, writes for the London Times.
Oh, is that right? Well, what do you say, Warren?
Well, it's the way I told you. I'm not a lawyer. I might do you more harm than good.
You're going to be like them others, huh?
It's not that, but Clint Wallace is a smart man. He knows the law.
That there Wallace is a no-good son of a gun. If he tries any of them smart lawyer tricks on me, I'm going to salivate him right through his fat gizzard.
Wallace is prosecuting McCune for the murder of Jack Furlong.
I see.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you something right here now. I didn't shoot that lily-livered cutback of a ruptured hog, no how. Not that I ain't saying whoever done oughtn't to get a medal.
I'm inclined to believe him, Kendall. The trouble is, there's not a lawyer in town to take his case.
Now, I'm willing to face up to what them Furlong says I done if I get a fair trial. But I've seen what that outlawyer Wallace can do with his fancy twisting words. He got me hung right now.
Do you mind my asking,
Haven't you been arrested?
Well, sure, I've been arrested. How come you think I'm still in Benton? Well,
I mean, isn't it usual for a suspect to be in jail?
Look, there ain't nobody gonna put me in the calaboose, especially for something I ain't done, not nohow. Ain't a man in Benton big enough to try it.
Why do they suspect you?
Why? Well, I'll tell you why. Because that eyeballer Buck Furlong, him and that cow critter wife of his, they got it in for me ever since I whipped Buck's brother Jack in a poker game. That's why. I cleaned him out, and he swore he'd get even with me. The whole blame family's been going around Benton saying I gouged Jack in the game. Me, gouge you. I ain't never cheated in cards all my born days.
Well, do they have any proof, I mean, that it was you?
They ain't got nothing.
There's a mule skinner in town, Ike Dawlish. He says he saw McCune arguing with Jack Furlong a few minutes before the shooting.
That fella Dawlish, he herded one band of sheep too many. You know, that fella's plumb loco. Everybody around here knows that. Except they take his word, because they got it in for me. Shucks, I was up the other end of town sleeping off a belly full of popsicle when it happened.
Anybody see you?
Well, if they did, they ain't coming up to say so.
Mm. When did it happen, the shooting?
Well, it's about 2 nights back. First I heard of it was the next morning. That Marshal O'Connor, he come up to me, he says, McCune, I got to arrest you for the murder of Jack Furlong. Well, sir, I says to him, Marshal, I hear tell you like to talk a windy. Won't you try it on me this morning, because I got a head on me that's giving me the orcorks. Well, sir, he comes back at me and he says, I ain't lying, McCune. You've been identified as a murderer. You'll have to come down to jail with me. And I says, you must be seeing black, O'Connor. If you think I'm going to do any such thing and you try and draw on me, I'll be happy to swap shots with you. But I ain't going to pull freight out of here if that's what's worrying you. I'm an innocent man, and you're going to have to prove me otherwise.
The trouble is, like I keep telling you, McCune, you're the one who's going to have to prove otherwise. They've got the witness.
Oh,
well, why can't you get a lawyer to defend you, Mr. McCune?
Well, sir, now I'll tell you why. Because that there Buck Furlong's wife, Maggie, is Barry's daughter, that's why. And Dad Barry's the justice of the peace, and ain't no lawyer with stuffings enough to stand up again that old Whistling Britches.
That does make it rather awkward.
You know something? It ain't right nor fitting in these times that a man can be telling the truth and no one believe him. Now, look, Warren, you ain't afraid of that Dad Barry, are you?
You know I'm not.
Well, then I'll pay you 100 in silver if you talk for me.
I'd like to, McCune, but...
All right. All right. You don't have to say no more. I'm walking me up to the trial house, and I'm going in and let them say what they want, and then I'm walking out, and the first man tries to stop me is going to get lead poison. Well, what do you want, O'Connor?
George McCune is marshal of this here town and authority vested in
O'Connor,
me.
O'Connor, come on, talk horse. What you want?
I got to take you down for the trial, McCune. I'm asking you polite-like to give up your guns.
I'm going to go with you, O'Connor, because you got a duty. But if you think I'm giving up my sixers to this here goose gun, you don't know no more than a mule-eared rabbit. Now, let's rattle hawks out of here.
You know, I feel sorry for him, but I'm glad to see him out of here. He's been with me for better than 2 hours, Kendall.
Yes, I can see where he could be quite persuasive.
You know, I wasn't kidding. If I'd have thought I could help him, I would. But I'm no good at public speaking and never was. Break out all of a sweat. He'll do better alone.
Who is he?
Well, McCune. He used to be an Indian scout with Crook. Hadn't been able to forget his ways. He's a tough man and likes folks to know it. That's why even if he didn't kill Furlong, most everybody figures he did. The jury will, too.
You don't think so?
No. No, he wouldn't have stayed around for the trial if he had. Besides, he wouldn't have killed a man like Jack Furlong. He'd have got more fun out of stomping his head in. I knew Furlong, he was a scroungy little toad, always fooling around with women. Somebody else's if he could.
What'll happen if the jury finds McCune guilty?
I don't know. It'll be trouble, though.
It seems a bit unfair, doesn't it?
Well, sure it is. But what are you going to do?
You know, as an outsider, I might be able to defend McCune.
Do you know anything about the law?
Well, I know some pretty important words. That might help. And I have a feeling that McCune's telling the truth.
I don't know about old Dad Barry, though. If he doesn't admit you to court, there's nothing you can do.
I think he will. Let's go and talk to McCune. At this saloon, it was already half full. The accused man was sitting in a small storeroom drinking a glass of beer, his gun still very much in evidence. Marshal O'Connor stood in the entranceway trying to appear as though he were guarding his prisoner, although he seemed extremely nervous and was obviously unhappy with his job. He didn't want us to talk to McHugh.
I'm sorry, Mr. Warren. I can't let either of you gentlemen in to see him.
We're his legal counsel, O'Connor.
O'Connor, you let him pass by or I'm going to come out.
You said you ain't got no lawyer, McHugh.
He's got one now.
Don't give me no trouble, O'Connor. I ain't in the mood. All right, close the door, O'Connor.
Well, I see you changed your mind, Warren. I'm real grateful to you.
It's not me, McHugh. It's Mr. Kendall. He's going to talk for you.
How come?
I heard what you had to say. I think there's a good chance you're innocent.
Are you a lawyer?
No, but I know something about law. Probably as much as Mr. Warren.
Uh-huh. How much you figure on getting paid?
Well, if we win, what you would have paid Warren. If we lose, no. It won't matter.
Yeah. All right, you got yourself a deal. But I want to tell you something, Kendall. If they call me guilty, you better duck, because it's going to be the ding-dangest shoot-up you ever saw in Benton.
The saloon courtroom was full. The judicial bench was the counter, and whiskey barrels set up on end in front of it served as the legal bar. 12 good men and true sat at tables placed to the side in a row. They were highly conscious of their importance to the community, and only 4 were taking advantage of the convenience of whiskey close at hand. Windows and doors stood open for the comfort of those inside who might feel the spring warmth, and for the accommodation of those crowded outside, unable to obtain even standing room. At 1 o'clock, court was called to order, the clerk hammering on the bar with the butt of his
pen. Order!
We got a case coming up in this here courtroom on account of George McHugh, bushwhack Jack Furlong, and he's going to get tried for it. Now, everybody get up in the cloud knockers, because here's his honor, Dad Bear, who is the judge of this year,
Willis. All right, everybody set. Court's in session, and I aim to state this ain't going to be no box social, so don't nobody forget it. Flint Wallace.
Right here, Your Honor.
You ready to prosecute?
I'm ready, Your Honor.
How about the defense?
The defense is ready.
Who are you?
J.B. Kendall. I've been retained as barrister to plead the case for my client, George McHugh.
You one of them traveling lawyers?
No, sir.
You got papers allowing you to talk in the territory of Montana?
No, sir.
Then sit down.
Well, I submit, Your Honor, that Mr. McHugh has a right to be heard and is within those rights to call whomsoever he chooses to speak for him. He has chosen me. A prima facie rule of law. Phipps versus Mahoney, Newgate, 1803.
What's he talking about, Clausen?
Well, it sounds like law talk to me, Your Honor.
Give me that legal book. Well, I ain't gonna hold up this trial whittle-wanging with you, mister. Ipso facto. So don't go trying any jackleg stuff with me or by ziggity. I'll fine you for contempt of this here judicial court. You savvy? Bring in the prisoner.
I'll bring in George McHugh.
Ain't nobody bringing me in. I'll bring him home self.
Marshal, this hombre's on trial for murder. What's he doing with them shooting irons and the shotgun?
McHugh, you better give me them guns.
I ain't giving you nothing.
Marshal, you... Marshal, see what I say? Take them weapons off of him.
Hey, Your Honor. Now, I got a big respect for things legal. That's how come I'm here. But if anybody tries to take my sixes, there's going to be a mess of trouble. These here weapons is to protect myself.
Marshal, I'm telling you...
Hey, Dad, you want them guns, you go get them yourself.
What are you objecting about, Clint? Ain't your court. Now, get on to the trial.
Our gentlemen and the jury, we're going to prove that George McCune did with malice and plain ornery cussedness kill poor old Jack Furlong on Thursday night at 9:30 o'clock.
The way she's carrying on, you'd think she was married to Jack instead of Buck.
We will prove that the killer McCune did
this. Objection.
What's the objection, mister?
The learned counsel refers to my client as a killer. This has yet to be proved in trial.
Ain't no call to object. Go ahead, Clint.
The killer, McCune, did take a .45 and blew two holes in said deceased Jack Furlong. It killed him. We got witnesses to say how it happened.
That's all, Your Honor.
All right. Hey, you. What's your name?
Kendall.
Yeah. Well, go on and make your speech.
Thank you, Your Honor. Gentlemen of the jury, I shall not take up your time with a verbose statement. I will only say that when the trial is at an end, you, the peers of George McCune, will send him from this courtroom a free man, exonerated of any complicity in this crime.
Well, what does it mean by that? Clint, call the first witness.
I call Buck Furlong, the dead man's poor brother, to the stand.
You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, so help you?
Sure.
Well, tell what your name is, Buck.
Shucks, you know my name, Slauson.
Now, Buck, this here's a court of law. We got to do things right. State your name.
Buck Furlong.
Mr. Furlong, I'd be obliged if you'd tell the court just what happened on Thursday night.
Sure, Clint. Like everybody knows, that no-account McCune shot my brother Jack.
I object. You shut up, mister. It ain't your turn yet. Go ahead, Buck.
Jack said he was coming down here to your place, Dad, for a shot of whiskey. And that sidewinder McCune dried off.
Listen, you freebie mule, he's coming down.
McCune, I'm fining you $20 for pulling a gun in this here court. That is contempt.
No more questions, Your Honor.
Cross-examination.
Go on.
Mr. Furlong, you say that McCune killed your brother?
He sure did.
How do you know that?
Everybody knows
it. I didn't ask that. How do you know?
Because he's the only one could have done. Ike Dawlish seen him do it.
And Mr. Dawlish told you?
Well, sure. Ain't that right, Dad?
That's right, Buck. Told me, too.
You had no other proof?
I didn't need none.
That's all, Mr. Furlong. Thank you.
Next witness.
There were 10 more witnesses after that, all proclaiming Jack Furlong's good name and damning the Cunes. The trial was momentarily interrupted when two deer were spotted frolicking in a meadow 100 yards from the courtroom. It was a wild dash to the windows in order to obtain a better view. When order was restored, one of the prosecution's most important witnesses was called, Mrs. Buck Furlong.
Now, Maggie, there ain't a soul here don't understand how you felt about your brother-in-law.
It's the truth, the holy truth. Sure.
Now, you tell the court what you know about the murder.
Well, that highbinder McCune, it wasn't enough he cheated our poor Jack out of his money, which everyone in Benton knows. He hated him because his conscience wouldn't let him sleep, haunted him like. So what I figure is when poor Jack went down to get himself a drop of whiskey for his poor tooth, which was ailing him something terrible, he run into McCune, and him being a drunken skunk, McCune couldn't stand to face up to him, so he shot him up. That's how it happened.
Mrs. Furlong.
And you, mister, you ought to be ashamed of sending a sucking coyote like that.
Ain't nobody! Me and Dora are going to call you!
Come on, Kill. When you're done again, that's contempt. Court fines you $20.
Now, Your Honor, I feel that my client is showing admirable control under the circumstances.
You got more questions to ask, mister?
Mrs. Furlong, you were very fond of your brother-in-law, were you not?
A sweet honey boy, he was.
Yes, I am sure this must be very painful. But aside from what you were told, you have absolutely no proof that George McCune shot Jack Furlong.
Oh, look at him! Look at him! Sitting there, still carrying the very gun that he murdered with!
Thank you very much, Mrs. Furlong. That's all.
Order!
Well, sir, don't seem to me like there's much sense going on with this here trial. From what I've heard, McCune's as good as hung right now.
Yeah. Your Honor.
You objecting again, mister?
Well, the prosecution hasn't called the eyewitness.
Oh, that's a waste of time, you ask me. All right, Clint, call your next witness.
I call Ike Dawlish, the man who saw the killing done.
Now, you swear to tell the whole truth, Dawlish?
Yes, sir, I surely do swear. Your name is Ike Dawlish?
Oh, yes.
Where was you on Thursday night at 9:30?
Well, like I told you, Mr. Wallace, I was coming along the street outside this saloon. And when I got to the corner, there was George McCune shooting up poor old Jack Furlong. Then he turns and sees me and takes off out of there like a snake-eyed swish tail. I walk over to Jack, and he's lying there feeling mighty foolish. And I come in here and tell old Dad Barry, and he goes out and sees what happened. That's all.
And you swear it was George McCune done the shooting?
Oh, I swear, I surely swear.
He's thrown off! Shut your mouth, McCune, or I'll fine you for contempt.
I'm all through, Your Honor.
You got any questions, Kendall?
Yes, a few. Now, what time was it when you saw the shooting, Mr. Dawlish?
9:30 o'clock.
It was dark?
Sure it was.
How close were you to McCune?
Well, fairish way, maybe to where Mr. Wallace is sitting.
20 feet. And you recognized McCune in the dark from 20 feet away?
Oh, not in the dark. When he come out in the light.
Ah, in the light. And you had a good look at his face?
Good enough.
You saw his face?
Well, kinda. But I seen McCune around. I know what he looks like without seeing his whole face.
How was he dressed?
Like he is now. I got a good memory. Them same gray pants.
Hey, what's that?
Go on. Gray pants.
Kind of a black jacket and gray shirt. Black Stetson, too, like in his hand.
Exactly the same clothes as he wore the night before last, that?
The same.
McCune, will you describe for Mr. Dawlish what you are wearing?
I got on black pants, blue jacket, blue shirt, gray Stetson. Same as I always wear.
Mr. Dawlish, what is the color of my jacket?
Gray.
You are colorblind, my friend. I don't think you saw Mr. McCune at all. I think you either saw someone else, or perhaps you shot Jack Furlong yourself and blamed it on McCune.
I'm getting out of here.
How did you know, Kendall?
I didn't. Not until Dawlish made that slip about color. The rest was luck.
You know, I feel kind of sorry for Little Runt, even if he did blame it on me.
Has he said why he did it?
Oh, well, it seems Jack Furlong was rather romantically inclined toward Dawlish's wife. He knew Mr. McCune would be the easiest person to blame for the shooting, and, well, that was that.
Hey, not that it makes no never mind, but listening to that Maggie Furlong, you figure maybe she and Jack was,
romantically inclined?
I figure that Jack Furlong had a very bad case of spring fever. It killed him.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis, and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Jack Crucian, Harry Bartell, Joe Kearns, Will Wright, Jack Moyles, Jeanette Nolan, Vic Perrin, and Stacy Harris. Music was composed and conducted by Amerigo Marino.
Be sure to be with us again next week at this time for another chapter from the journal of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
you can stay tuned next week for Frontier Gentlemen, as I haven't put my set list together yet. However, you heard it. Written and directed by Anthony Ellis, starring John Daner. That was episode 11, titled The Trial, with an original air date of the 13th of April, 1958. It was a sustained show. Like I said previously, this is the sustained show double feature. You're listening to Arthur on the Grand Hour at 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. After this PSA, I'll explain a little bit more about the sustained show for those that don't recollect.
WMFO annual drive is in effect. We're looking to raise $5,000 to continue to keep your freeform station playing your favorite music. WMFO is a nonprofit station with staff, students, and community members who volunteer their time to bring you their favorite music and shows. We need your support to keep it all running, so donate now by logging on to donate.wmfo.org. That's donate.wmfo.org. Or mail a check payable to trustees of Tufts College. Send it to WMFO, P.O. Box 65, Medford, Massachusetts, 02155. Thank you for your support from all of us here at your freeform station, 91.5 WMFO.
Yes, trying to reach the goal of $5,000. I believe it's about $1,200 when I checked last night. Well, like I was saying before, public service announcement here. Sustained show. The Frontier Gentleman was. It never had any official sponsors. If you listened over the summer when I played a few episodes, they did try and court the Dodge Chrysler company, Dodge or Chrysler, I forget who, with some homemade commercials to try and drum up some sort of interest in a sponsorship. Never got sponsored. This next program, very familiar to several of the core listeners. It was as well as a sustained show. This one was titled Cheyenne Express. It's episode number 24, with an original air date of the 7th of March, 1954.
You'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter, just one of the many fine programs brought to you Sundays on NBC. Later this evening, listen to the NBC Star Playhouse with one of your favorite stars. Hear Meet the Press, America's number one newsmaking program. And be sure to keep tuned for the dramatic story of communism in America on Last Man Out. It's a wonderful lineup of great programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
Had almost gone out and the evening chill crept through the chinks in the rough-hewn logs of the cabin walls. But the man standing at the window made no attempt to stir the embers into flame. Instead, he stared at the graying sky and the purple hills, his eyes constantly narrowing as they tried to penetrate the lengthening shadows. A noise at the door behind him caused the man to spin around. His guns hovered in midair.
Who's there?
Me, Wilbur. They're coming, Floyd. I seen them from the top of the ridge.
How many?
Oh, 15, maybe more. It's pretty dark, but 15 anyway.
Huh. That ought to be enough.
Yeah.
Why'd you come back, Wilbur? How come you didn't run off like the others?
Well, I couldn't leave you here alone, Floyd. We've been together too long.
I ain't giving up. No matter how many there are, I ain't giving up.
Sure. That's what I figured.
You figured I'd fight it out and you come back anyhow?
Back, ain't it?
Yeah. Here, load them for me.
Huh?
My guns, load them.
What, Floyd?
You got bullets, ain't you?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, it's just that I ain't never seen you take them off before. Never thought I'd see the day when Floyd Winters would take off his guns, hand them to another man. What makes you so trusting all of a sudden?
I've found out who I can trust. Found it out tonight. You didn't run off with the rest.
If Russ was here, nobody would have run off.
Maybe. But Russ ain't here. Go on, Wilbur. Load them for me.
Floyd Winters handed the gun belt to his friend, turned and glanced out of the window. Wilbur English lifted one of the revolvers from its holster and checked the cylinder. There were two bullets inside. He raised the gun and pointed it at the other man's back. He calmly squeezed the trigger twice. The man at the window fell forward, shattering the glass.
I'd spotted the campfire, maybe about 15 minutes back, just before the trail swung down from Yellow Mesa into the canyon. I should have come on it by now. I was pretty sure it was somewhere around along here. But all I could see was just pitch black in every direction. Easy, boy. Easy. Whoa. Well, maybe it's just been my imagination. Maybe. No, doggone it. That's smoke, all right. Whoa, Scar. Whoa. I slid out of the saddle and moseyed around for a minute or two. Then I felt something warm through the toe of my boot. It was not just warm, either. It was... That fire hadn't been out very long. Somebody had just finished burying it under a pile of dirt and sand. So I walked...
Get him up, Russ. Hi.
What?
Hi, I said. I ain't bluffing. You ought to know that.
Okay. But there's just one thing...
Turn around. Don't try nothing fancy, neither. You alone?
Yeah, I'm alone.
But wasn't very smart, Russ.
Now, look, mister. I don't happen to be Russ, whoever he is.
I don't recognize you. You think I don't know you've been after me ever since it happened.
Now, all I'm saying...
I felt you. Out there in the dark, I felt you coming closer and closer. And so I built this here fire and waited, and then I put it out just before you got here. Figured you'd get curious and stop. Figured I'd have the draw on you.
Just listen to me, will
you? I ain't afraid to kill you, Russ. I ain't afraid to kill anybody now. You should have realized that. You should have realized that anybody else would be easy. After Floyd, even you, Russ, you're going to be easy.
Well, I never have believed in trying to get off a shot when another man has the draw, but the way things were going, it looked like I had to risk it. There just didn't seem to be any way of reasoning with him and making him understand who I was. I heard him take another step. I went down on one knee and twisted around, grabbed my gun. Its shot just skimmed across the part of my hair. Well, it looked like I'd managed to do a little better than that. I heard his gun skid out of his hand, and he went over backwards. He didn't fall, though. He just sat down with a thud. And he stayed that way, sitting there in a heap, just staring at the ground. I picked up his gun and moved in close. It was pretty dark, but I could make out a little fella, short, clumpish, with a kind of a white face. He kept his eyes down, as if he couldn't raise his head, and as if he just didn't want to bring himself to look at me.
Go on, Rusky. You get it over with. Don't make me wait. Don't make me beg. It wouldn't do no good. Whatever I said, whatever I told you, wouldn't do no good. Please, Russ. Please get it over. I was quick with Floyd. He never knew a thing. Never knew what hit him. I swear I don't. Don't just keep me sitting here waiting. Don't do that.
You better tie something around that hand.
Huh? What?
Now, use your handkerchief or a piece of shirt tail or something.
Why, he really ain't Russ.
I tried to tell you that before.
Oh, but I thought from where you were standing, where you looked just like that. Oh, I don't know. I was certain. I don't see how I could have been wrong.
Well, you sure were, mister.
Well, he must still be around here somewhere. He must still be following me.
Now, I've been on this trail all day. I haven't seen a single soul but you.
No, you... He ain't lying to me.
Oh, well, why should I lie to you?
Well, I didn't mean that. Don't pay no attention to me. I'm kind of upset.
Yeah, yeah. Well, go on. Do something about that hand.
Oh, sure. It ain't hurt bad. The bullet just went through a fatty part.
Mm-hmm. Well, the next time you try to shoot somebody, you might find out who it is.
Oh, I'm awful sorry. Be more careful.
Yeah.
My name's Jones. Warren Jones.
Is that so?
Yeah. What's yours, mister?
Ponsett. Britt Ponsett.
The six shooter?
Yeah, some folks say that. My name's Ponsett.
Oh, no wonder you were so handy with a gun. Well, I sure am glad to meet you, Mr. Ponsett.
The Jones, you said?
Yeah, that's right.
Not English? Not Wilbur English?
What are you talking about?
Well, I thought maybe you made another mistake tonight.
Another one?
Well, you were wrong about who I was. You sure you're not wrong about who you are, too?
Well, I guess it don't do me no good to lie to you. Yeah, you're right. My name is English.
Mm-hmm.
We ain't met up before.
Oh, but I've heard about you.
Oh?
Yeah. And about how you killed Floyd Winters a couple weeks ago. I heard about that.
Oh. Well, news sure does travel, don't it?
Some news does, yeah. I reckon it does.
You didn't know I was in these here parts, did you? You hadn't heard I was heading this way.
What?
Well, you seemed so certain about who it was, I thought maybe you were expecting to run into me.
No, you weren't very hard to figure out, English. The way you thought I was somebody else and named Russ, and the way you kept harping about Floyd.
Oh, well, now, here, listen, Mr. Ponsett, you won't tell anybody that we met up. You won't tell him where I am.
Know that?
You know he's looking for me, don't you? You know he swore he'll kill me.
You mean Russ Winters?
Well, sure, that's who I mean, and nobody's even trying to stop him. I thought folks would all be on my side now. I thought they'd be grateful for what I'd done. Been trying to catch Floyd for years. I saved him the trouble.
That's true. That's true enough.
Well, they act like killing him was wrong. They act like he was some kind of a hero.
Well, Floyd Winters wasn't any kind of a hero. I'll sure go along with that.
Well, then why is everybody against me? Why don't they capture us?
I expect they will before long.
When? After he's murdered me? Don't they realize that he's just as bad as Floyd ever was? They were two of a kind.
Well, you ought to know, English. You were part of their gang, weren't you?
I never denied that. Yeah, but I wasn't mean like Floyd and Russ. Oh, I guess I did my share of harm. I rode with them on plenty of holdups. But I never killed nobody. All the time I was with the Winters brothers, I never killed nobody.
Except Floyd. You killed him.
Well, that was different. He was an outlaw, wasn't he? Had it coming to him. Besides, if I hadn't shot him, there'd have been more killing. Well, to see that posse that was coming, some of them, I was saving their lives.
And earning yourself a reward and a pardon at the same time,
I wasn't thinking of that. I wasn't thinking of myself.
You weren't, huh?
No, sir. Oh, what good did it do me anyhow? Russ is hunting me down, and folks say that he's right. They say that I'm a coward, that I shouldn't have shot Floyd in the back. Well, it's easy enough to talk, Brad. They didn't know him, but I did. I had to shoot him in the back. There wasn't any other way.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of a convenient killing, too, wasn't it? With the posse outside ready to take you both?
You're just like all the others, aren't you, Ponsett? You make a big thing out of law and order, but it's got to be done just so. It don't matter how many men Floyd Winters murdered in cold blood. Oh, just because he was shot in the back, you feel sorry for him. You hold it against me.
Now, look here. I don't feel sorry for Winters or anything that happened to him.
Well, then you're the only one who...
And I'm not going to spend half the night arguing about it, either. Now, here's your gun. Now, why don't you just be a little more careful with it from now on, huh? So long.
You're just going to leave me here, huh?
What are you talking about? You said your hand wasn't hurt bad. You got a horse, haven't you?
Oh, sure, sure. I got a horse. He's over there in those trees, but...
But what?
Well, I told you the Russ is after me. If he catches me alone, he'll kill me for sure.
Well, you don't even know he's in the neighborhood.
Well, you don't know that he is, and why can't I ride along with you, Ponset? You're heading towards Single Pine, ain't you?
Yeah.
Well, Russ wouldn't try nothing if you were with me.
No.
But, maybe you want him to kill me. Maybe you think that it's what I deserve.
Now, hold on. Hold on now. Even if folks don't exactly approve of what you did to Floyd, the way you did it, I mean, well, nobody feels that Russ has got any right to revenge.
And it's okay for me to ride along with you, just as far as Single Pine.
What do you figure to do there?
Well, I got to meet up with Sheriff Preston. He's leaving for Cheyenne tomorrow, delivering a prisoner. He promised to take me along with him.
Oh.
That's where my pardon's waiting in Cheyenne. And the reward money.
I see.
I'm entitled to it, ain't I?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you've earned it, all right.
Sheriff Preston gave me his word. He said he'll see to it that I get to Cheyenne okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike Preston's a good man. Haven't got anything to worry about that.
Oh, yeah, but I got to make it to Single Pine first, Ponce. I got to make it that far on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what'd he say?
All right, English. Get your horse.
We'll return to James Stewart as the Six Shooter in just a moment. It's a strange quirk of human nature, but most of us never think, except in the most abstract way, of an accident ever happening to us. It's always the other fellow who's involved. But nevertheless, accidents go right on happening at an ever-increasing alarming rate, and it can't always be happening only to the other fellow. For instance, one out of five families will have a traffic accident this year. Think of that. And how can you be sure you won't be that one? Well, there's one way of piling up some percentages in your favor. A few simple precautions will guarantee better accident odds for your family. For one thing, remember it's not always easy to stop quickly in wet weather. Drive so that you can stop when and if you want to. And always drive with a clean, clear windshield. There are a great many safety precautions, and for the most part, it's simply a matter of applying common sense to driving. Just remember to drive as if your life depended on it, because it does. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponset.
We rode on through most of the night, Wilbur, English, and me. Along about 11 o'clock, we stopped to rest, but Wilbur was so doggone nervous and skittery, I just couldn't get any sleep, so we started off again. Must have been about noon when we finally hit Single Pine. The main street wasn't very crowded, a couple of wagons, two or three ladies in the mercantile, and old Judge Hendricks sunning himself in front of the livery stable. Everything seemed pretty normal, just about what you'd expect on a Tuesday. That didn't keep Wilbur from looking back over his shoulder every once in a while, like he thought somebody was getting ready to put a bullet in the nape of his neck. You know. We headed over to the hitching rail in front of Sheriff Preston's office and pulled up. Wooshka.
Come on over.
Well, here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Ponce.
Enough to thank me for. I didn't do anything.
Well, you never know what might have happened if you had...
What's the matter, Andy?
That fellow standing there... In the shade beside that store.
What about him?
Well, I can't make him out. Not real clear, but... He does sort of look like Russ.
It does, huh? Yeah. He looks a whole lot more like Ben Fletcher. That happens to be his hardware store he's leaning up against, too.
Oh.
Now, come on. Let's get inside. Look at it. Yeah, sounds like he's asleep, doesn't it?
That's a fine way for a sheriff to be acting. Suppose that had been Russ Winters out there just now.
Well, it wasn't. And this isn't Sheriff Preston either.
What?
No, it's Phil Waterman. Hey, Phil. Hey,
Hey, come on. Come on, wake up, Phil.
Fred, what are you doing around here?
Well, a man has come in town every once in a while. Looks like you're taking it pretty easy, Phil.
Baby's got the colic. Didn't get a wink of sleep all night long.
Is that so? Why, I hope it's nothing serious.
No. Doc says he'll be all right in a couple of days.
Oh, fine. Glad to hear. Is Mike around?
Yeah, you just missed him, Britt.
Oh?
He left about an hour ago. I'm holding down the fort till he comes back.
You mean the sheriff's already gone to Cheyenne?
Hmm?
You heard me? He's gone?
No. He had to take some men over toward Red Rock. He's putting off his trip to Cheyenne for a day or so.
He's putting it off, is he?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Just sit around and wait for him? The sheriff off gallivanting somewhere? Who's going to protect me?
Just what is it you need protecting from, mister?
This is Wilbur English, Phil.
Oh.
Well, the sheriff promised that he'd see that I got to Cheyenne. He promised he'd take me with him.
Well, he can't take you till he goes himself. But he left word he was expecting you. Said I was to tell you to sit tight and not leave town.
I might have known that he'd pull a stunt like this.
Oh, wait, well, what are you talking about?
You're a fancy sheriff. That's what I'm talking about. I told you they all want Russ to kill me. They all think I got it coming. Well, why do you think that Sheriff Preston picked today to leave town so that he'll be out of the way if Russ shows up, so he won't have to do nothing towards stopping him? That's what?
Now, you listen here. If Mike Preston said he'll take you to Cheyenne, he'll take you there. He ain't never gone back on his word yet. Not even with a murdering outlaw. I forgot you ain't an outlaw anymore. You're just a public-spirited citizen. All right, Mr. Public-spirited citizen. You get yourself over to that hotel across the street and you stay there. When Mike comes back, I'll tell him where you are. Well, what are you waiting for? How in thunder did you happen to come into town with him?
Oh, we met up accidentally last night. He seemed kind of anxious for company.
Funny, ain't it? The way you feel about a man like that.
Hmm?
Well, getting rid of Floyd Winters was a blessing. Ain't no doubt about it. And I guess we all owe English something for killing him. If he hadn't done it when he did, nobody knows how many other men would have been shot.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but somehow, well, in spite of all that, it's pretty hard to like English very much, ain't it?
Yeah, it seems like it's darn near impossible, doesn't it, Phil? Well, I had something to eat over at Molly Davis's cafe, and then I did my errands. Got myself a new pair of boots and a haircut. I almost fell asleep sitting in that barber's chair. I guess that was to be expected, seeing as how I didn't get much rest the night before. And the idea of taking a little siesta sort of crossed my mind. Not that I usually nap in the daylight, you understand, but I... Well, I went over to the hotel and rented myself a room. And I was planning to stay in town overnight anyhow, so I figured I might as well get my money's worth out of the bed I was paying for. After all, it cost me 50 cents. Must have been about 4:15 when I heard somebody pounding at the door. Yeah, who is it?
It's me, Wilbur.
All right. Come on in.
He's here. He's in Single Pine.
What are you talking about?
Didn't you hear what I said? Russ Winters is here in Single Pine right now. He's here this afternoon.
No, take it easy, English.
You got to help me get away, Ponson. You got to.
You imagine you saw him a couple of times before. Do you remember that?
Maybe I did, but this ain't my imagination.
Hmm?
Go on, read it.
What's this? You don't have much longer to wait, Russ.
Well?
Where'd it come from,
English? He shoved it under the door to my room.
Did you see him?
I didn't have to see him.
Well, I'd say if Russ Winters was in town and knew where you were staying, he wouldn't waste any time sending you notes.
It's just what he'd do, Ponson. He liked to torture me. He'd like nothing better.
Mm-hmm. Maybe so. Sheriff back in?
I don't know, and I'm not waiting around to find out.
Oh?
There's a train for Cheyenne at 4:30. I'm taking it.
Mm-hmm. I thought Sheriff Preston said you were to sit tight.
Oh, sure. Sit tight and be murdered. You seen that message? Seen it with your own eyes. You don't expect me to stick around here after that, do you?
Yeah, if I was in your place...
But you're not in my place, Ponson.
That's so. I'm not.
But you got to do something for me.
Oh?
Just, Just see you to the station and make sure I get aboard that train, all right? It ain't much to ask, is it?
It depends on whether Russ Winter's really in town or not.
But I tell you, he won't shoot if somebody's watching. He won't take a chance until he's sure killed me.
I still think you're making a mistake. I think you ought to stick around until the sheriff comes back.
Oh, I don't care what you think.
Okay, English, go ahead. I'll keep an eye on you.
Well, come on.
What for? The depot's right across the street. I've got a front window here. I won't have any trouble watching you from here. Go on. Well, the train pulled in right on time, 4:30. I saw Wilbur English climb aboard. As far as I could tell, he was the only passenger getting on Single Pine. I looked up and down the street. Nobody seemed to be paying any attention to him one way or the other. Well, I figured that'd be about the last we'd see of him. As soon as he collected his reward money, he'd probably head east. Back there, he can stay out of Russ Winter's way. And Russ would probably he'd be captured sooner or later, just a question of time. The only thing that puzzled me was that note English had found. I thought maybe I ought to tell Phil Waterman about it, so I walked over to the sheriff's office.
Might have known it. So that's what they were up to, those little devils.
Was that?
The McPherson kids. I went over to the hotel to see if English got a room all right. He was sort of my responsibility as long as Mike was out of town.
Yeah, sure.
Well, just as I got to the top of the stairs, I saw Sandy McPherson's two boys standing outside English's room.
Mm-hmm.
They ran off just as soon as I spotted them, so I figured they'd been doing something they shouldn't.
Oh. Well, you think it was a couple of kids put that note under the door?
Well, must have been.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah, they probably heard he was in town, maybe even recognized him going into the hotel.
Yeah.
I guess they thought they'd give him a little scare. You know, English isn't very popular even with the kids, Brick.
Uh-huh, yeah, I know that.
They made up a song about him and how he killed Floyd Winters.
Is that so?
Sure. First thing you know, folks will be forgetting that Winters was an outlaw and a murderer. They'll just remember that he was shot in the back by one of his own men. And they'll say that that was wrong. And they'll feel sorry for him. And we'll have Wilbur English to thank for that, too. Yeah, maybe that's why I ain't so sure he done us any favors. No matter how you look at it.
Say, isn't that Mike pulling up over there?
Hmm? Yeah. Hey, he must have been doing some fast traveling. Look at the foam on that Pinto's flanks. Wonder how he made it.
Oh, hello, Mike.
Howdy, Britt. Britt. What are you doing here?
I was passing the time of day.
Oh?
Everything all right, Sheriff?
Yeah, it's pretty good, Phil. Pretty good. I thought we were going to get Russ Winters this afternoon, but he slipped through our fingers again.
You mean Russ was really in the neighborhood here?
Well, not exactly, Britt. Not exactly. Closest he got was about 15 miles east. I heard he was heading our way, though, so I took some of the boys out to see if we couldn't bring him in. We picked up his trail, too, and we were gaining on him, but he hightailed it into Red Rock and grabbed the train just as it was about to pull out. Depot agent remembered him, description and all. I telegraphed ahead. They'll be waiting for him in Cheyenne when he gets there.
He took the Cheyenne train?
Union Pacific Express. You know, Britt. One leaves here at 4:30.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. Well, they arrested Russ Winters in Cheyenne, all right. Didn't even try to get away. But Wilbur English, Wilbur never got there. The passenger said it happened just after Russ got aboard at Red Rock. Wilbur took one look at him and started running through the cars. And when he got to the back platform, well, he just didn't stop. And he fell 75, 80 feet right straight down the side of a ravine. He didn't have a chance. The funny thing was that the folks who saw it, they said that Russ Winters hadn't made a move toward him. Not a move.
If a neighbor in distress came to your door, would you help him? Of course you would. But not everyone who needs help can come to you personally. It may be a flood victim in Ohio, the victim of an earthquake in California, of a hurricane in Texas, Or it might be your boy, or your neighbor's boy in Korea, needing an emergency furlough to come home. Disaster can strike in many places and for as many reasons. And when it does strike, even though you might not be there to help in person, you can help through your Red Cross. That's why the Red Cross volunteer calls on you. He calls in the name of the helpless and injured, of the little girl who needs blood to save her life, of the serviceman who must fly to the bedside of his dangerously ill parent or child. When you join the Red Cross, you help them all, wherever they may be, just as surely as if you had extended a helping hand in person. So when the Red Cross volunteer comes to your door, meet him with a smile and answer the call. Join and serve, and wear your Red Cross button proudly. It means that in any emergency, in any disaster, you are there serving humanity. The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Frank Gerstle as Floyd Winters, Herb Vigran as Phil Waterman, Barney Phillips as Mike Preston, and Paul Richards as Wilbur English. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. By the way, you'll be interested in knowing, the Six Shooter has been chosen for broadcast to our men overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Services. This is John Wall speaking.
That was the Six Shooter, Cheyenne Express, episode 24, with an original air date of the 7th of March, 1954. The Six Shooter aired for one season from the 20th of September 1953 to the 24th of June 1954. It was a sustained show, had no sponsors, much like the first act of this sustained show double feature, The Frontier Gentleman, which aired from the 2nd of February to the 16th of November 1958. Both of those shows were kind of in the twilight of radio when television was becoming more and more popular, and they were losing out sponsorships to that medium. This has been Arthur. I'm listening to the Grand Hour. Not sure what I'm going to play next week, but it'll be a couple of dramas. Up next is Marco. I'm going to play out the little Artie Shaw. Thanks for listening. Have a nice morning.